The following is a 1250 WTMA special presentation. WTMA.
Hi, this is John Quincy, welcoming you to another hour of the History of TMA, our special look back at the past programming and people of the station you're listening to right now. In previous hours, we've traced WTMA's history from its sign-on as Charleston's second radio station in June of 1939, right through the Tiger Radio days of the 1960s. Now we're taking a look back at the 1970s, WTMA's second decade of dominance as Charleston's number one station and one of the leading top 40 music stations in the Southeast.
Another full hour of music with John Burwell.
WTMA.
And it's a good morning to you too, 10 o'clock. This is Cliff Richard.
John Burwell was a TMA air personality between 1974 and 1981.
TMA was one station that was totally consistent all throughout the 60s and 70s. And TMA in the 70s, and well actually in the 60s as well, had more listeners than any other station in the entire Southeast. Basically, what makes a radio station important is the number of listeners that they have, the ratings that they can pull. And we had higher ratings than any radio station in the entire Southeast back then. It was an incredible, incredible time to be alive, incredible time to be on the radio. You know, TMA was the big time. If you were a disc jockey, you wanted to get there. Back then, we were the personalities of the day. People actually listened to the radio not just for music, but also for the disc jockeys. You know, they're like, God, Gary London's on the radio now, you know, or Boobie Nash, or, you know, and these were names that people knew, and they knew them just as well as they knew members of their family. And they would tune in, and they'd actually listen not only to the music, but also to the disc jockey.
1250 WTMA, it's more than a feeling. Kind of like an everlasting love, you know what I mean? Boston at 9:54 with Gary London just pumping out the hits.
Gary London was another popular WTMA DJ in the 70s.
They were phenomenal. They were truly phenomenal. Probably the best time of my entire life. Growing up listening to TMA, and then right out of school being hired by John Trenton, who had just was stepping out of the morning show and program director to become the general manager, called me and offered me the all-night show, and I took it. And then just a very short time, Billy Smith left the station, and I fell into the midday slot. Left TMA for just a couple of months, went to Norfolk to work at a big blowtorch FM up there, and Bill Dudley, who used to be the engineer at TMA, and J.J. Scott, who used to be the program director back at TMA, called me and said, hey, come on back down to Charleston. We want you to do mornings on KTM. We're going to change the format. 2 days later, we were back in town, and I was doing mornings at WKTM. And then Boobie Nash had a little altercation. I don't know. Politics goes on inside of a radio station when dealing with personalities all the time. And Boobie quit, and so we actually did a flip-flop. Boobie went to mornings at KTM. I went to afternoons at WTMA. Boobie Nash, everybody loved him. Everybody listened to him. And I says to myself, you know, it's going to be hard to fill these shoes. And lo and behold, if I didn't increase his ratings by like, I forget, what, a third? Well, we were pulling back in those 60 shares. That would be 60% of the people in Charleston who had a radio were listening to me in the afternoons at TMA. And here I was a 22, 23-year-old kid. And it was just, wow, this is neat. You know, it's showbiz time, folks. AM frequency, and we played 45 RPM records. We had this big piece of plywood up there with pegs on it. You'd pull a record off the top. They weren't even in little protective shucks. We'd throw it on the turntable and reach over and cue it up to the beginning point. And as soon as you hit the switch, the record would start, and boom, you were on the air. I loved it. Feel very blessed by being a part of it. Had a great group of guys that we worked with.
The most hits music, WTMA. Good morning, 10:03 with Keith Nichols, Tuesday at Charleston. Clear skies, 35 degrees, says the weatherman right now. 60 degrees today's expected high with sunshine, Superman.
Many Charleston residents remember Keith Nichols as a local TV weatherman, most recently at Channel 5. But before the bright lights of television came calling, Keith Nichols was a bona fide radio star on the mighty TMA.
Some of that weird Donovan music for you this morning. 1966 Golden at WTMA, your sunshine Superman. It's 10:06. Good morning.
The history of TMA.
I was there late 60s doing news with Frank Hunt, and then went back to school, finished there at USC, and was working at some radio stations in Columbia. and came back to WTMA when I graduated, which was December of 1972. John Trenton was program director at the time, and I had been working at WNOK in Columbia and was graduating from college and looking around for a full-time gig with a little more bucks, and sent a tape, and John called me back up because he knew me. I had worked there about a year and a half before and said, "You've turned into a disc jockey. Come work midnight to 6. So that's what I did for almost a year. Then did 7 to midnight for a year or two, and finally ended up on middays before I left and went over to television.
Did you work at WTMA at both the Dock Street Theater and Orange Grove?
No, only at Orange Grove Road.
Okay.
No, they had moved to Orange Grove. We're still owned by Ted Turner, though, when I first started.
What was that like working for Ted Turner?
It was interesting. For those of you that have never seen the Orange Grove Studios, there used to be a dock out back where the tower was. And the reason it was there is because this is back when Mr. Turner was heavily into the America's Cup stuff. And it was not unusual for a couple, three times a year for him to sail up the river, dock at the dock in the back of the radio station, and come in and speak to everybody. At that time, just wonderfully open, very nice gentleman. Preferred to spend his time back with the troops, as he called them, and used to scare the management people to death when he'd walk in the back door. But he had the jaunty yachting cap on and usually cut off shorts and a t-shirt and walk around and just talk to everybody.
Who were some of the other folks that were there when you were there?
John Trenton was doing morning drive. Middays was a guy named Bob Riley, who is now, believe it or not, a professor of electrical engineering at the University of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Ted Bell, who last I heard was at a radio station in Orangeburg, and this, of course, was years ago. Booby Nash did afternoon drive. I did 7 to midnight, and a young man named Steve Russell, who I still believes in the Charleston area, did midnight to 6. It was a phenomenal time for AM radio. It was just before the FM revolution hit. We had ratings then that people now would absolutely kill people for. The last book before the FM came on, and I was doing 7 to midnight, I had a 77 share.
Wow.
Which is unheard of anymore. I mean, we literally own the market. But back then, there were only like 12 or 13 stations in the whole town, which is, you know, double that now. So it was a different kind of time. We could have fun. We could do some things that pushed the edge of the envelope and just really, really had a good time.
Until the FM revolution took place in the late 70s. How come WTMA wasn't beaten by anybody else? Why did they stay on top for so long as a top 40 station in the 60s and 70s?
I don't know. I think it may have been owed to the fact that we did not turn over a lot of people in the critical periods. I think John did morning drive there for, you know, 10 years, and then he became like a general manager type. Bob Nash was there forever. We turned over some people in midday and in the evening hours, but even then, a number of the people were there for a very, very long time, which you usually don't find in radio anymore. You get a lot of quick turnover. People were very loyal. We did we ran contests, some of which now I don't even think they allow. One particular one I remember, I was working 7 to midnight. The Doc Savage movies came out in the early 70s. It was a very big deal, big media hype, back when the old Ultravision Theater was the theater in Charleston. And so the movie promoters gave us 1,000 movie marquee posters, basically to give away. And I remember John came to me one night, as just before I was about to go on at 7, and he said, "Give these away. I don't care how you do it. You can, you know, the first 1,000 callers, just get them out of here." Okay, so that's essentially what we did. And we sat there and said, "Okay, for the next X number of callers that call, you get a free Doc Savage movie poster." About 15 minutes later, the Bell system called and said, "What are you people doing?" We told them. It seems that when we did that, we blew out 4 telephone exchanges in the Charleston area. I mean, shut them down.
Wow.
So many people trying to call. And that has always just seemed phenomenal to me, that kind of loyalty is exhibited to radio station. And we had good production values and, you know, spent some money and just really had fun with it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Keith Nichols with Hot Fun in the Summertime. WTMA,
Charleston. It's 9:05 of the Big 1250. It's getting it all together. Charlene, Monday night school out for the summer, and Sylvia and her pillow on the blanket. I know you can dig it.
Hey, baby, let me stay.
Oh, yeah. Sylvia, I love it. it. 908 WTMA on a Monday night. 76 degrees. Had a little pillow talk in the background there. I didn't know we could do that. We're at the same time. Hey, the Citadel.
Back when the competition wasn't nearly as fierce as it is in radio now, and the number of stations were less, something clicked with the audience out there. And we just had a ball. I know in the summers, if you were a local advertiser in June, July, August in Charleston, you almost could not buy a commercial on WTMA. We were sold out with regional and national business, Coca-Cola, Coppertone, Dairy Queen, all those summer-related activities, and for substantial money. And I know that the station was profitable for a very, very long time. I was still at WTMA when I started working part-time. Believe it or not, doing weekend weather and sports for WCIV-TV, and this was in 1975. And I think I left and went to full-time television in 1976.
What do you remember most about WTMA during your time there? What are some of the memories that you could share?
Oh, my. I remember the really interesting one was another guy named John J. Scott, who took over as program director after John became general manager. And the great snowstorm of 1973, people remember that, where they had like 2 feet of snow in Sumter and Orangeburg, and we had like 8 inches here in Charleston. Of course, it shut this place down for a number of days. I mean, just nobody could move. Well, John Scott and I were sort of stuck at the radio station, and so we were we cranked up the old gasoline generator and commenced to continue on for almost 18 hours before any relief got there. With some, number one, some more gasoline, because it was really funny. As the generator would get low on gas, you know, this is back in the days, folks, where we played 45 RPM records and things like CDs didn't exist. And they would go from like 45 RPM down to like 38 and then back up. And it was fun. It was like a big family. Not only did everybody work together well at the station, we got together socially as a group on a lot of occasions. At that time, I was production manager, so I handled all the commercial production. You know, the management gave us basically free rein to be creative and, you know, try something. And it wasn't that, you know, it must follow this format and everything must be exactly as this, that, and the other. And we just free-formed it and went out and had a good time. And I think that was part of the reason for our success, is people knew that we liked one another. And it showed on the air, and that we were having fun and trying to project that to them so that they could have fun too. When I first started, we were doing simulcasting with WTMA FM, which
is now
95SX, which was, I think, also part and parcel into the success of the station, because at night, you know, with that 100,000 watt signal, we got way out into the hinterlands.
Want to be famous? Enter your name in the Fame Game. The Mighty TMA sent us a postcard to Fame Game. Post Office Box 10208 Charleston. You might be famous. You have 2 minutes to call us if you sing your name on the radio. And you qualify for the grand prize. An entire incredible week of glorious fame.
Coming up on the history of TMA, we'll talk to one of the guys who made TMA mighty at night in the 70s. Brother Dave.
You're listening to the history of TMA with John Quincy. On 1250 WTMA. Now, here's more of the history of TMA with John Quincy.
WTMA, Charleston.
We continue our trip in the mighty TMA way back machine, where this hour, we're stuck in the 70s.
1250 TMA. That was Chicago and Harry Truman, the Brother Dave Show, reminding you that you could be a winner in Jackpot Poker of the Mighty TMA. Check the serial numbers of your dollar bills for winning hands and listen to win your share of thousands of dollars in Jackpot Poker of the Mighty TMA.
Brother Dave rocked the Lowcountry at night right here on the 1250 spot in the latter part of 1974.
It was probably the premier top 40 station in the Carolinas, excluding Big Waves in Charlotte.
Now, who was the program director at WTMA?
When I came there, John Trenton had been program director for years, but had moved up to station manager or general manager. And the program director at that time was Lee Richards, who also was doing the morning show from 6 till 10 a.m. And then I think it was 10 until 1, you had Keith Nichols. And then 1 till about 3, or maybe it was noon to 3. Maybe Nichols did 10 to noon because he was production director. He had a lot of commercials to record and take care of. And then I think it was noon to 3 was John Burwell. And then 3 to 7, of course, was Booby Nash. Then I went on at 7 and worked till midnight. Then at midnight, Randy Scott came on. Randy and I got to be great friends, and I was real sad, and I believe it was about 1981 or 82 or so, he crashed his airplane. He became a private pilot and was doing airborne traffic reports. I really do look back fondly on my WTMA days. I made some wonderful friends. I owe an incredible debt to Booby Nash. I can't ever pay that man back. He was so good to me and gave me encouragement when I needed it and was always there if I needed to talk and never, ever dumped any of his problems on me. I was always real grateful for him. I've just always looked up to him. I just always thought he was the way a radio personality should be. He was always happy and upbeat and always had something good to say for you. Keith Nichols, another great guy, always positive. He was sort of stays to himself. He wasn't over at my house partying every night like Randy and Booby and some of the others, but a really nice guy. John Burwell's the king of the nice guys. I can't say enough good about John either. WTMA, you know, it does have a special place because at that time it was the best sounding radio station I'd ever heard in my life. 73, 74, 75 on through that area. They had an engineer there who was just incredible. He was absolutely fabulous. His name was Charlie McCants. He did things with the sound of that radio station that made an AM station sound like an FM station. I've never heard an AM station that sounded like that before. I grew up listening to WQXI in Atlanta. It did not sound that good. And, of course, WQXI was like the benchmark of Southern Top 40 radio stations. So WTMA really had something going for it. Had good programming, had good music, it had a solid history, it had great personalities, it had fun, it had spontaneity, it had a live feel to it, not like you get today. WTMA always had that spark, that spontaneity, that charisma and friendliness in the sound. And that went all the way around the board from the time Lee Richards went on in the morning at 6 o'clock till Randy Scott went off at 6 o'clock the next morning. There were live people. They were local people. They were right there in that studio. They were on the phone talking to you, taking your requests and dedications. It was a special thing. Everybody always talks about Quixie and Dixie, WQXI in Atlanta. They always talk about what a great radio station it was. Well, Quixie had nothing on WTMA during the time I was there. It was a legend.
1250 TMA. That was the 3 degrees. When am I going to get to see you again? 1224, the Brother Leaf Show. It's Tuesday morning. Jackson Brown. Dr. Miles, if you can.
The History of TMA.
Next up on the History of TMA, we'll talk to former WTMA morning man and program director, Crazy Bob McLean.
For more about WTMA's past, surf to WTMAmemories.com for recordings, interviews, pictures, and more. That's WTMAmemories.com. More of the special program, The History of TMA, next on 1250 WTMA. Listening to the History of TMA. With more, here's Charleston radio historian John Quincy.
As a rule, the 1970s was the last decade for the success of top 40 music stations on the AM dial. The majority of listeners hadn't discovered FM radio yet, or still preferred to get the latest hit songs from AM stations, just like they always had. WTMA was the Charleston top 40 station, and the city's number one station for much of the 70s. This hour, we're talking to some of the folks who helped TMA remain dominant during that decade.
Currently, 47 degrees in Mount Pleasant, 46 degrees downtown, and 47 degrees at Music Radio. This is John Dozier, WTMA News. And now, the man who's not buying the recession, Bob McLean, plays the best music on the mighty TMA.
And here is a weight report just handed me, John.
Oh.
There was a report of a slight earth tremor in Goose Creek this morning. Some slight damage was reported to the Thomas building in town, the Exxon station.
Crazy Bob McLean woke up Charlestonians on the mighty TMA in 1974 and 1978.
Well, let's see. I came there initially in August of 1977 and was hired to be the program director and do the morning show. And at the time, John Trenton was the general manager. John and I had, we went way back. We'd worked together back in the mid-1960s at WAIR in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. John and I had been jocks there together. I kind of went gallivanting across the country, and John had ended up at TMA as program director and then had risen through the ranks and became general manager. And a couple of months before I was actually hired, John had called me, and he was looking for somebody to fill the role of being program director and doing the morning show. And so I gave him a couple of names of people that I knew that I thought, you know, would be suitable candidates. And he called me back a month or so later and said, you know, look, these guys are all okay, but they're not exactly what I'm looking for. What would you think about coming down here and doing it yourself? And I said, well, you know, John, nothing personal, but at the time I was working at WIBG in Philadelphia, which was the number four market in the country. And Charleston, obviously, is, you know, it's a beautiful place, and I love the low country, but it was in Philadelphia. And obviously, I didn't think they could pay me anywhere near what I was making in Philly. And he surprised me by matching what I was making in Philadelphia to get me to come to Charleston. And I was never happier that I did after I got there and just fell in love with it.
This is yours.
Oh, yeah.
1250. WTMA.
Can you believe only three more days until Christmas? Amazing. December the 21st. Of course, you could tell anyway, even if you didn't know the date, that Christmas was just a couple of days away. Very easy to tell. All the stores are putting up their Easter sale signs.
Now, what was the station like when you got here?
It was in pretty good shape, but that was at a point in radio's history where AM radio, at least as far as music formats is concerned, was really being threatened by FM. There were a lot of FM stations that were in the process at that time, mid to late 70s, of adopting music formats in all kinds of contemporary forms, top 40, album-oriented rock, those sorts of things. So we implemented a heavily what we call day-parted kind of structure, both to the music and to the presentation. And I bought a new jingle package. And in fact, I put on a music radio jingle package. And I brought back the Mighty TMA logo as a positioning statement because I knew that they had used a couple of them in the past. They used the Tiger Radio positioning statement, and then they'd also use the Mighty TMA. And so I decided to bring back the Mighty TMA part. There was another guy that I had known also from North Carolina who also had worked with John Trenton and myself in Winston-Salem, and that was Bob Nash. And he had been at TMA and then had left, and so I thought it'd be a good idea to bring him back to do afternoons. Probably the longest lasting memory that I have of TMA, of course, because of where they were located, and they were in the house at that time, not downtown, was coming to work to do the morning show and the smell of the marsh.
Pluff mud.
Yes. It was very distinctive, and it certainly lingered in my memory. But that whole area, you know, is so unique and so beautiful that it just kind of went along with it.
Music Radio, the Mighty TMA, Tracy Bob and Chic. Dance, 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 dance. Last time somebody said that to me, I was out in a bar in Phoenix, Arizona. And they were holding a gun on me at the time.
Right.
Dance. 8:10, 10 minutes after 8 o'clock with Crazy Bob on Wednesday. That goes to show the old saying. Remember, friends, you can get more with a kind word and a gun than with just a kind word.
Yes.
Want a deal for your feet, then you just can't.
Now, WTMA was a big station in the 60s and late 50s and into the 70s.
Absolutely.
Now, was the station still one of the top rated stations in Charleston during the late 70s when you were there?
It had been, and then it had started to slip, and I guess that's what prompted John Trenton to make the change to bring me in. And fortunately, the changes that we implemented musically and in terms of positioning the station with the image as the Mighty TMA and reviving that, all of those things that we implemented worked, because at that time, in the spring rating period, I remember looking at all of the AM top 40 or CHR stations all across the country, and there were very, very few that actually showed ratings gains And WTMA was one of the few that did.
Did you do anything special? Do you remember any interesting promotions or contests you did?
Well, the biggest thing that we did was we did a contest called Free Money. And it was based on the very simple concept that two of the most powerful words in the English language are free and money. And when you combine them together, you got a pretty potent combination. So we did a pretty big money giveaway. I think we gave away $10,000 total over a 60-day period, and we did it in a lot of different ways. We did it tied in with bumper stickers and with call-in giveaways, and there were a lot of different aspects to the contest, but it was very successful for us.
What's your best memory of WTMA besides the Pluff Bun?
I guess just the fact that I've always been a golfer and love to play golf, and of course Charleston's a great area to be in for that. And the station, you know, was so well thought of in the community that when I came in, the fact that I was part of TMA just kind of gave you immediate acceptance. And we bought a home out in West Ashley and loved it, loved living there. And it was just a really, really nice place to be. And I guess probably one of the things that I appreciated most about it was coming from, you know, the hustle and bustle and the industrial grime of Philadelphia to a place as beautiful as Charleston was night and day.
Right now, 48 in Hanahan, 46 downtown. We have rainy skies and 47 degrees at TMA. And this reminder, those of you interested in volunteering your services or talent for the 1978 Easter Seal Telethon are asked to telephone 723-7224. Just a minute. Somebody at the door. Yes, come in.
Excuse me. I just heard your announcement there about the Easter Seal Telethon.
Yes, what about it?
Well, see, I'm a talent scout.
Mm-hmm.
I have this act that I would like to get on the telethon.
An act?
Yeah, it's this girl, you see. In fact, she's appearing now at one of the local clubs here in town.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I see. What's her act?
Well, it's kind of novel. You see, she can take off all her clothing without using her hands.
Gee, that is strange. She can take off all her clothing without using her hands?
Yeah.
How could she do that?
It's very simple. She uses my hands.
Get the guy out of here, please.
Bob McClain in the morning.
1250, the best music, WTMA.
Even though WTMA was primarily a music station in the 1970s, news played a big part of its service to the Lowcountry. Next up on the history of TMA, we'll chat with one of the station's news directors from the 70s, Al Cammie.
There's more History of TMA with John Quincy coming up straight ahead, right here on 1250 WTMA. You're listening to the
History of TMA.
This hour, we look back at the men and the memories who made TMA mighty in the 1970s.
WTMA, Charleston. Another body search in Florence County. This is Al Cammie with Steve Bell, WTMA News.
Al Cammie helped almost WTMA keep ago, Charleston informed during his stint in the 1250 News Department.
I got there in, I think it was May of 74, and left towards the end of 77. 3.5 great years. I'll tell you, it's amazing how the memories come back. I think all in our lives, we always have one or two periods of time that really stand out in your mind. And the days of WTMA certainly were that. It was a wonderful group of people. It was a lot of fun. And from a news perspective, Charleston, amazingly, was a wonderful news town.
Why was that?
I think it was a couple of things. One was a blending of different cultures that eventually found their way into Charleston. And then you had the historical culture there. So it made for a very interesting time. Southern politics had always been very vibrant, but particularly for the period of 1970 to about 1978, the South was undergoing a renaissance and shedding a lot of its old labels, and it was the New South. So it brought in New South-style politicians, a new way of doing things, and it was exciting, and it was vibrant. I considered TMA my really first great job.
Now, did you come in as news director?
No, I came in just as morning drive news, and then a few months later, my colleague that was there, Jack Wilson, left And I became the news director, and I was there with a woman by the name of Bernadette Woodbury. Bernadette's husband was at the medical school in Charleston. He was graduating, and then she was going to become a doctor, too. She was on her way to medical school. So, you know, I lost contact with them many, many, many years ago. But I believe Bernadette had successfully made it through medical school, and so TMA can rightfully say they helped seat another doctor.
As well as a couple of preachers, too.
Absolutely. And he's the very Reverend John Burwell.
Yes, exactly. And, of course, Booby Nash ended up being a minister, too.
It was possibly the greatest job I had next to the one I have now.
And why was that?
It was just an amazing mix of people that, if you took them all individually and looked at them as a group and said, they'll never blend. But the magic happened. John Burwell, who I consider probably one of the greatest rock historians and radio historians. Lee Richards, who was the business type. He was very staid, but was great on air. Lee Richards on air was not Lee Richards off the air. Lee Richards left right before I did. I think Lee left in 77, and he was replaced by the Duck, Bob McLean. Bob McLean was there. I guess I was only there about 4 or 5 weeks with Bob McLean. Because I had already accepted the position up in Greenville, and I was working out time. Chuck Smith had asked me if I wouldn't mind staying on to help find my replacement, and I believe I was replaced by John Dozier. John was over at WCSC Radio. Booby Nash was around. Booby Nash was always a cut-up. Steve Russell, laid-back, just a wonderful presenter, loved music. He particularly loved Gordon Lightfoot. I remember he used to play a lot of that. And Lee Richards used to get mad at him when he'd overplay it. But Steve Russell was a wonderful guy. Gary London. Gary, we always used to kid him about being from Walterboro. We were convinced he had an old bloodhound named Old Blue that he'd sit on the porch with back in Walterbury, as we used to call it. But he was a country guy who loved rock and lived rock. Overnight was Randy, and God rest his soul, Randy was also a cut-up.
Randy Scott?
Randy Scott, who several years later, after I left, passed away in a tragic helicopter accident. He was doing traffic. But Randy did the overnights, and Randy, I mean, you never knew what to expect. I used to do the early morning drive, so I would be in there by 5 in the morning. And you'd never know what to expect. I came in one night, early one morning for my shift, and there's Randy doing the overnight show in a bra and hot pants. And you just never knew what to expect. So it made it great. You know, from the front office where John Trenton sat, John's a wonderful guy. I always have very fond memories of him. We used to go out and do what we considered to be investigative reporting back then, and John was always chomping at his fingernails, wondering when we were going to get him sued. Luckily, that never happened, but John supported us all the way. And then there's another fellow there that most people were afraid of, and that was Chuck Smith. I'll tell you, I have never met a person who was so insightful but kept to himself. He ruled the roost with an iron hand, but if you knew him, you were never afraid of him. He was just a really nice person. On the engineering side, of course, Bill Dudley was there in the early days. Then he went across town when he became a station owner, and Chuck McCann came in. Chuck was very much what an engineer would look like. He was laid back, a little stocky, didn't have much of a sense of humor, at least it didn't appear so. But as you got to know him, and as he loosened up, this guy had a remarkable sense of humor. He came into the newsroom one day. I was there by myself. Steve Bell wasn't in that morning for some reason. And I'm reading a story. We used to use this yellow recycled paper that used to come off the teletype. I mean, this thing was so flammable. It was probably as flammable as gasoline. Well, I started reading a story off there, and the next thing I know, Chuck is in there, and he lights the top of the copy. So I have to read faster as the flame is coming down and burning up the copy. Needless to say, the flame got to the bottom of the copy before I did. But those are the kinds of things Chuck would do. And it was just mischief, and it was a lot of fun. And, you know, the audience never knew about it. And you tried to keep your composure as best you can, but sometimes it just wasn't possible.
Besides just doing the best you possibly can, was there a certain method to the madness of getting the news, a certain philosophy on what to do and how much to do?
Well, we did multiple newscasts in the drive times, at some points 30 minutes apart. So the key was to always try to keep it fresh, which forced us to be very much involved in the community, be very much involved with those making news. because we had to have fresh sound for every newscast. We weren't playing yesterday's stories the next morning. Everything was fresh, everything was new, every newscast. The little sound bites that they have in news called actualities, we would constantly be gathering them. Everything that happened, constantly getting a hold of people. And I can't imagine how many people absolutely hated us. I'd call congressmen at 5 in the morning at home if there was something newsworthy about what they were doing or what they were involved in. And after a while, they would get used to it. But one-time newsmakers never got used to it, getting calls in the middle of the night or early morning. I know I wouldn't have liked it.
So the news department was pretty aggressive.
It had to be. We had a limited time in which to present and the charge to keep it fresh.
Now, did that come from the programming department, the station management?
It didn't come from programming. Programming set the hour clock. We were pretty much left alone, which was very surprising. John Trenton was always very much involved in what we were doing, but never dictated what we should or should not do. And I can't ever remember one single time that Lee Richards ever did that. I think he recognized that Steve Bell, myself, and Adrell McCants, who was also there, were responsible people, that we understood the community, we understood the nature of news, and we understood radio, and we understood the formatting and how everything should work together. So they really allowed us a lot of leeway, and probably in some cases too much. You know, it's funny, because Steve Bell and I probably earned 50% of what we were paid for Mutual. That's how many national items actually occurred in our coverage area.
More bones uncovered in South Carolina. Steve Bell of Mutual affiliate WTMA reports.
Florence County Sheriff William Barnes said they found some bones last night. Authorities are checking them out. Officials from the Medical University of South Carolina here in Charleston are studying the remains. Sheriff Barnes said the officers have been unable to continue the search of a wooded area near Prospect, South Carolina, because of rain and temperatures in the high 30s. He said the search would resume when the weather improved.
You're listening to Mutual News.
We would feed Mutual either voice stories or combination stories on a regular basis. And back then, they used to pay, I think it was $7 a story. And we were picking up an extra $50 a week each.
Wow.
Which was, at that time, about 30% of my salary. And then when events would occur, if the president was coming to South Carolina, Mutual would call us to go cover it for them so they didn't have to send the White House correspondent. Then we also started a lot of public affairs programming, which in most stations is a necessary evil. You know, if you find a slot somewhere where nobody's listening and air it so you can meet your FCC requirements back then. Well, Steve and I got a little enterprising in 2 of the 3 years we were together. What we did is we did year-end news roundups that we syndicated to South Carolina radio stations. And we didn't know we were doing anything special. It was just that we had an amazing library that we maintained. I think in today's term it's probably called junk. But we maintained all the newsmaker stuff over the year. And we would do a year-end show that would air on TMA and PXI. And then somebody suggested, why don't you just try to sell it to the other radio stations? And I think the 1 year that we did it, we sold like 40 stations.
Wow.
And I think we got $20 a piece for them. It was so cool. I mean, we were rolling in money, we thought.
So you work with Steve Bell. Tell me a little bit about working with him.
I have great love for Steve. When Steve came into town, Steve stayed with Pat and I. And it was a good opportunity to kind of bring him up to speed on what was going on around town. Steve is a very smart person. He's a bright guy. He captured things very quickly. And in fact, he set direction. He was the rational one of the two of us. My reaction was, let's go get that bastard. And he'd say, no, wait a minute. You know, you can't call him a bastard yet. You don't have the facts to support that conclusion. And I got a lot of respect for Steve. He's a great guy. And he worked so damn hard.
Almost 1 year ago, 8 bodies in 3 shallow graves were unearthed near Prospect in Florence County. Subsequently, 3 men were sent to jail for the series of murders. Since that time, authorities have been scouring the state in efforts to find additional murder victims. In Sumter County last week, the body of Patricia Ann Allsbrooks was located in a septic tank. The young woman had been missing since 1970, with SLED locating the remains through information obtained from a confidential informant.
This morning, there are reports out of Florence County that another body has been discovered. However, 12th Circuit Solicitor Kenneth Summerford notes that the rumors of the body find are still unconfirmed in his office. Sheriff Billy Barnes of Florence County is away from his office at this hour, and North Charleston police, who first located the Florence County graves, have traveled to the PD area.
Several hundred students at St. John's High School are protesting a football decision that placed their school out of the conference football title with James Island and Fort Johnson.
Principal Thomas Brown says the students are outside the school, essentially boycotting classes.
If you're basically, they've been cheated out of it, especially since the coaches voted, you know. And I explained to them about the Constitution and everything and how the thing was written and all this. You know, I explained this to them. But I think basically they still feel that they have been cheated out of it. And they probably feel the way I feel. I just felt bad about the whole thing on Monday and Tuesday, you know. But one thing I will say, though, is that they have been they're out on the campus, that's true, but so far they have been pretty orderly.
A boycott by black students at the Calhoun County Public Schools enters its third day today. On Monday, classes were completely shut down but reopened with low attendance yesterday. The students have presented a list of grievances. That list includes a demand that teachers who send their own children to private schools not be hired.
At Wando High School last week, one student was injured in a scuffle. Authorities report that although there was a fight, all is quiet at the school. However, despite reports from school and police officials that the situation is normalized, five state law enforcement division agents are still there, as well as a commanding lieutenant from SLED. School spokesperson John Cohn was asked why SLED has taken an interest in a campus that officials describe as quiet and normal.
The school district did not request SLED come in and investigate the situation. This is in the county of Charleston, and we have good liaison with the county police, and their team was on site to do the investigation.
So the superintendent did not call them in?
No, sir.
Do you remember what the radio competition was like for news during the time that you were here? Was anybody else doing what WTMA was doing?
When we began, the answer is no. But by 1975, John Patterson was over at WKTM, the station that Dudley bought, and CSC was starting up, and WPAL had people. I think that was pretty much it in radio, but for a market that size, to have four relatively reasonably sized dedicated staff news operations was highly unusual. Now, we didn't see our competition as other radio stations. We saw our competition as the newspaper and television. As a medium, television was starting to gain, and newspapers were starting to decline, but ever so slightly. And we always considered ourselves in competition with the other media, not necessarily radio stations. And we devoted more and more time and energy and resources to ensuring that we were ahead of the competition. And I think, in part, it was very much due to John Trenton. John Trenton, while he didn't steer us in that direction, didn't dissuade us from it, and he saw the advantages in it, that even though you're only doing 10-minute newscasts during drive times, and you're on a top 40 station, it doesn't mean you can't bring an audience in as a result of one programming element or another. And I think John was a smart programmer. I really believe that the quality of news contributed to the overall ratings. Nobody ever disputed that for us. Our drive times were always very strong. And by 1975, there was much more interaction between the DJ and the newsperson that started to develop. And it was never dissuaded, which was always good. Another lifelong friend from WKTM Radio, John Patterson. John came to town just a little bit before Steve Bell did. And John and I had met at a journalist party in town. He had just come to town. He had come in from Wisconsin. He and I hit it off, and we fast became friends. John was not on the air doing news at KTM at the same time we were on the air. They had a different news block. He would call during a commercial because we had two breaks in the newscast. He would call on the hotline, and he'd tell me a joke. And I was laughing so hard, I couldn't go back on. And he knew he was doing this. And we would do it to him as well. Steve and I, at one point or another, we were both laughing, and neither of us could go back on the air. So it was a little bit of friendly competition. The absolute highlight of my time at WTMA was when we adopted our son. That was in 1976. We were coming home from Columbia, where we received custody of him, and the first stop we made was at WTMA. And the receptionist's name was Barbara, a wonderful lady. And one of the billing people was Carol Leggette. And we came in with the baby, and in the booth, they went ahead and just threw an album on, and everybody came out, and we all gathered in the lobby. I mean, they just let the radio station go, Chuck Smith included. And that's when I knew we were a family. And I think if there was one event that made TMA so special, that was it. If I had to do it all over again, I don't think I would have changed anything.
It's 70 degrees.
Our high for today in the low 70s.
This is Al Cammie.
With Steve Bell, WTMA News.
On Wednesday, November 10th, 1976.
1250.
WTMA.
A great big 1250 5,000 watt thank you to Al Cammie, John Burwell, Gary London, Keith Nichols, and Bob McLean for their memories of the mighty TMA in the 1970s. I'm John Quincy, and if you'd like to find out more about our station's past, surf to WTMAmemories.com for audio recordings, photos, stories, and more. That's WTMAmemories.com. And keep it here on the station that continues to make history, as well as report it. 1250 WTMA.